One is not born, but rather becomes a woman. With this revolutionary declaration, Simone de Beauvoir shattered centuries of assumptions about gender as biological destiny. In 1949, when women were still largely defined by their relationships to men, Beauvoir's philosophical bombshell exposed femininity as a social construct rather than an innate quality. Her analysis reveals how women have been systematically defined as the other, not merely oppressed, but fundamentally alienated from their own humanity. Think about it. Throughout history, men have represented both the positive and the neutral, while women exist primarily in relation to them. This asymmetry isn't just academic theory. It shapes every aspect of women's daily lives, from career opportunities to intimate relationships. What makes this insight so powerful is how it transforms personal struggles into political awareness. The frustrations many women feel aren't individual failings, but symptoms of a deeper social structure that positions them as secondary beings. Biology provides the raw material of human existence, but social context gives it meaning. While acknowledging physical differences between sexes, Beauvoir rejects the notion that biology justifies women's subordination. The body is not a thing, it is a situation, she insists, a starting point from which we engage with the world, not a prison that determines our fate. Consider how female biology has been weaponized against women. Pregnancy and motherhood become justifications for exclusion from public life. Menstruation becomes evidence of emotional instability. Physical differences in average strength become grounds for limiting women's autonomy. Yet these interpretations are social choices, not biological necessities. What's truly radical is Beauvoir's rejection of a feminine essence. The characteristics we associate with femininity, passivity, emotionality, nurturing, aren't innate but cultivated through socialization. Haven't you noticed how differently we treat children based on perceived gender from their earliest days? Girls aren't born preferring pink and dolls. They're systematically guided towards certain activities while being discouraged from others. This insight challenges us to question which aspects of gender we've internalized without examination. How does a human being become feminine? Beauvoir shows how girls are systematically molded to accept limitation. In early childhood, boys and girls display similar traits, both active, curious, and eager to explore. Around age 5, a profound divergence begins. Boys are encouraged to climb trees and assert themselves, while girls are taught restraint, to stay clean, be careful, act like a little lady. Puberty widens this divide. Boys gain freedom, while girls face increased surveillance. The developing female body becomes both a source of shame and scrutiny. She becomes an object, Beauvoir writes, and she sees herself as an object. The adolescent girl faces an impossible contradiction. She must be attractive to men, yet wary of male desire, desirable, but not desiring. This creates what Beauvoir calls bad faith, where girls learn to suppress their authentic selves to meet others' expectations. Marriage, traditionally presented as woman's fulfillment, receives Beauvoir's harshest critique. Rather than a partnership of equals, marriage historically functioned as an economic transaction between men, with women as the exchanged goods. Marriage is the destiny traditionally offered to women by society, Beauvoir writes. Most women are married, have been married, are preparing to be married, or suffer from not being married. For wives, marriage often means economic dependence and endless domestic labor. The housewife's work is perpetual and undervalued. Few tasks are more like the torture of Sisyphus than housework, with its endless repetition. Unlike productive labor that creates lasting value, domestic work merely maintains the status quo. Marriage also isolates women from each other and public life. The housewife becomes enclosed in her feelings, her house, with limited opportunity for solidarity or social engagement. Even now, with most women working outside the home, they typically retain primary responsibility for domestic duties, creating a second shift that limits their personal development. Beauvoir shows how romantic love reflects broader power dynamics. While men view love as one life component alongside career and personal goals, women, historically denied other paths to transcendence, often make it their entire focus, treating it as a form of salvation through devotion to another. The woman in love seeks transcendence by completely identifying with her beloved's projects, making herself essential through constant care and attention. She hopes to achieve meaning through his accomplishments, often abandoning her own interests and autonomy in the process. This approach inevitably fails. Living solely for love traps women in dependency and bad faith, denying their potential for independent action. As Beauvoir notes, love will become life-giving rather than dangerous only when women can love from strength rather than weakness, not to escape themselves, but to find themselves. If marriage represents confinement, economic independence offers potential liberation. It is through work that woman has been able, to a large extent, to close the gap separating her from the male, Beauvoir writes. Economic autonomy allows women to define themselves beyond traditional roles, creating identities rooted in their own achievements. Yet work alone isn't enough. Working women face unique challenges: the double burden of professional and domestic responsibilities, persistent wage inequality, sexual harassment, and contradictory expectations about leadership and femininity. Have you noticed how successful women are criticized for the very qualities that would be praised in men? How they must navigate being assertive but not aggressive, confident but not intimidating. True liberation requires fundamental structural changes: equal distribution of domestic labor, workplace policies supporting family life, and valuing traditionally female work. Beauvoir calls for nothing less than a complete reimagining of gender relations based on mutual recognition of each other's full humanity. This means moving beyond formal equality to lived experience, beyond legal rights to daily reality. Beauvoir rejects both traditional femininity and mere imitation of masculine behaviors. True liberation requires women to claim their status as subjects while acknowledging their embodied reality. Women must define themselves through projects and actions, actively shaping rather than merely maintaining the world. This transformation demands collective action and structural change. Economic independence, relief from disproportionate domestic labor, and self-definition beyond male relationships are essential for genuine equality. The goal is a world where sex is a fact but not destiny, where relationships foster mutual recognition rather than domination, and where individuals are defined by their projects rather than gender. 70 years later, Beauvoir's vision remains radical. Despite women's formal rights advancing in many countries, deep inequalities persist. Her insight that gender is socially constructed illuminates how patriarchal power operates through seemingly natural behaviors. Her existentialist framework provides an ethical foundation. If human freedom defines our humanity, then gender-based restrictions deny our shared essence. Women's liberation becomes both a political movement and ethical imperative, one that enables everyone to live more authentically.